All right. Hello, Brennan.
Hello, Jordan. Welcome back.
Welcome back to you as well. What are we talking about today? What we got on the mind?
Oh, we're going to get into something scaly today.
We're going to get real cold-blooded here in a second. Baby.
We're talking about lizards. We're talking about, specifically, the reptile.
Yes. Which is a 1966 horror mystery film, and it's amazing, and I'm really excited to talk about it, actually.
Yeah, we got it, because it looked really bad, but it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, the front, the monster on it, on the cover, looks not scary. It's like a snake human face, but like with googly eyes, pretty much.
It's like a Muppet?
Yeah. And like I thought it was going to be a lot stupider and a lot worse.
Yeah.
But I ended up loving it, so I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, but don't worry. Some of it is still stupid.
Yes, don't worry. There's enough stupid for everyone here to have a small helping, but yeah, I liked it in a stupid way. You know? Does that make sense?
I know. It makes sense.
Okay, well, let's talk about some history.
Mm-hmm.
So please, let me know what kind of information you got about general lizard movies.
General lizard movies. There have been a few lizard movies before this. Not as many as there have been after this, but, you know, you pretty much had Godzilla
right. In
the 50s. And you also had Creature of the Black Lagoon.
When did that come out?
That was 1954.
Okay.
And
so did that predate Godzilla?
I think just by a little bit.
Yeah, just by like a year. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And doesn't have a lot in common with Godzilla. Just they're both, you know, reptiles.
True.
And yeah, no, but what I really want to talk about is the Black Lagoon creature.
Yeah.
That's what I think really inspired this, and just like the mood of it all. And fun fact, I just want to use this fun fact.
Tell me, I love them. I live for
that. In 1954, Creature of the Black Lagoon was released in 3D.
Okay. Cool.
Right?
Yeah. They've been using that shit to lure people in.
Oh, yeah.
Since the 50s. I bet that shit was a lot cooler back then, though.
Right?
People don't care as much now.
Love to be in one of those theaters.
Yeah.
I also think this movie owes a lot to, like, vampire movies and stuff. Not just because she's got two teeth that she bites people with.
Right.
But, you know, you've got, like, this is plot stuff. We'll get into it later.
Yeah.
Do you have any notes on the history to tell us about?
Well, I have notes on the actual film's history.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm interested. Educate me.
So, this film was a Hammer Film production, which was, like, a British production house in the 60s. And, yeah, it's best known for the gothic horror films it's made from the 50s to the 70s. But it also made noir, sci-fi, thrillers, all sorts of shit. But horror is what it was really good at, and it, like, dominated that B-horror movie market, so.
Nice.
They were producing a lot of shit back then, and then it was stopped production completely in the 80s. They didn't produce anything for a really long time. And then it was sold in May 2007, and then they started producing horror films again.
Oh, cool.
So, fun fact, Hammer Productions has actually produced The Woman in Black from 2012, which is a great horror movie Daniel Radcliffe, and The Quiet Ones in 2014, which, is that the one? No, it's not.
That's not the...
I was thinking the one with Nicole Kidman.
Bird Box?
No, that's Sandra Bullock. Totally different
people. Okay.
Nicole Kidman's in, like, Big Little Lies.
Right, right. I'll edit that out. I know who Nicole Kidman is.
I'm going to edit it in specifically so everyone knows that you don't know who Nicole Kidman is. Okay, The Quiet Ones. Could you stop?
Just, you know, adding a little ASMR.
I think The Others is what I'm thinking with Nicole Kidman. It's like an early 2000s movie.
Okay.
It was pretty good. Anyways, back on track. So, Hammer Productions makes horror films still, interestingly. So the director, John Gilling, has written and directed, like, an ass ton of movies. And they're all, like, specific genre B kind of movies. Like, it seems like this guy just, like, pumps it out. If he has, like, a slightest idea, he's like, all right, this is a feature film, bro. I got this. So... here are some of my favorite titles. Literally, you could just go on John Gilling's page and just scroll and scroll. There's, like, so many fucking titles. But some of my favorites are The Bandit of Zahobi.
Oh.
Whispering Smith Hits London. The Lady Craved Excitement. And Trog. T-R-O-G. Trog.
Trog.
Yeah. The Lady Craved Excitement. I love that.
Yeah.
What a name. Anyways.
Same.
Yeah. Who doesn't? Whom among us does not crave excitement? Am I right? So some other little fun facts. The lady who played the reptile apparently never did another movie where she was, like, in any sort of costuming or, like, anything on her face, like any heavy makeup, because she got so claustrophobic in this.
Oh.
Which I also wonder if that has to do with, like, how little they showed the monster in the movie. Maybe they just tried not to film her as much. Or maybe because the monster did look great. Looked kind of bad.
A little bit bad.
But who knows? Oh, anyways.
I mean, she did a good job.
Yeah.
Despite feeling claustrophobic.
Yeah. So. But another fun fact is that this director filmed another film of his, The Plague of Zombies. And they filmed this movie and The Reptile back to back. So they just used the exact same set. Like, they hardly changed anything.
Oh, that's great.
So, like, you can watch both movies and be like, oh, there's this that's in Plague of Zombies or whatever the fuck. So that's interesting. I also did some research on the actual, like, snake cult that they have.
There's an actual snake cult.
No, there's not. But, I mean, like, you know, in the movie there's an actual cult that, you know, has turned this bitch into a snake. So, they say it's a Malaysian snake cult, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, that's not a thing. There aren't really snake cults in Malaysia. I read that it was like a Saudi Arabia thing? There's like some kind of thing, but not anywhere in Malaysia, not anywhere near Malaysia. That's false. But, there is a lot of, like... like, snake worship, I guess? Like, divine... There are some religions that look at snakes as, like, divine creatures, right?
Right.
So, naga in Sanskrit means snake. And so, this word also in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism? Jainism? Yeah. Jainism? Okay. I'm really just going to talk about Hinduism and Buddhism, because that's the one I did research on. But in those religions, it refers to, like, a semi-divine, half-human, half-serpent creature that can be turned back to human.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Sounds like our little friend, Anna. Right?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Anna Naga.
Oh my god.
What I'm hearing?
I'm hearing things.
Ah!
Voices. It's voices. That's what I'm hearing. So, anyways, yeah, it's like in some of these mythologies and these stories of those cultures, it's like a whole race of people. Hmm. And yeah, anyways, in Hinduism and Buddhism, there's different ways they look at this like Naga race of people. So I'm going to get into that just a little bit.
Oh, please.
All right.
Get in there.
Sounds good. So in Hinduism, like I said, it can be human, part human serpent, or just like full serpent, this Naga race. They're often associated with bodies of water. Okay. I was trying to think of like where in the film there was like a body of water, but there wasn't. So that was
kind of a puddle in the basement.
Okay, there's a puddle.
It's a puddle.
Interesting. I feel like it rains a lot in the movie too.
There's a lot of rain sound,
but yeah,
it only actually rains in one scene.
Yeah, I think it's really just the dramatic effect mm-hmm. of the like sound of rain. But anyways, I have a lot of notes on the sound, so we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But and in Hindu myth, it's often they're often the protagonists of the stories.
That's
which is interesting.
Really neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no love for the snakes anywhere else.
It's true. I feel like, yeah, no, these, like, Hindus and Buddhists apparently are just, like, super into snakes. Well, I mean, maybe that's, like, a, I don't know, like, a certain stem of Buddhism or, like, an old-style Buddhist thing. Like, I don't feel like every Hindu person is, like, yeah, I'm, like, fucking obsessed with snakes. I feel like probably not, but whatever. Anyways, in Buddhism, it's usually a human being with a snake or a dragon over their head. That's usually how they're depicted.
Okay.
So it's like a human being, but the snake is like looming over them.
Kind of like the covers of the Animorphs books? Just like the first and the last part?
No. But I see where you're going.
It's what I'm visualizing.
Like a snake like looming over their head.
Yeah.
Like watching over them. Yeah. Kind of spooky or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
The Naga race is like the protector of Buddha, and like the two chief disciples of Buddha, like in their scripture, whatever, are like half serpent Naga people.
Very cool.
Yeah, they're very bodyguards. Yeah, they're high up. I mean, if I had to pick a bodyguard, it would be a half snake human person.
Obviously. Right?
Yeah.
The only choice.
I mean, like, mixed with some type of animal, at least, but probably a venomous snake would be the best one. Yeah. So, that's what I got for that, for the history of the movie, The Reptile.
The Reptile. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was this... I don't know any of it came from anything. Just made it all up, but this, it's cool.
Yeah, it seems like... Oh, and I also forgot to write this down, too, that the Naga race is often depicted as a king cobra.
Oh, and they, that's what they're talking about in the
movie. Exactly. There's a scene where they're like, oh, this I've only seen somebody look like this once. It was a man who was bitten by a king cobra.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they did some research. They weren't totally making it up.
It's not entirely misrepresented.
Yeah, no. It's definitely...
Mostly.
Yeah. they took some facts and ran with them, which is fine. It's a movie, you know. Who are we to say?
Yeah.
What?
It's a movie.
It's a movie. Come on.
Okay. Right. Speaking of, let's talk about the movie.
Let's talk about the movie.
Yeah. Let's just do a quick recap.
Yeah. Anything let's do comes plot. To mind.
You know. Fun
I'll
facts.
Interject. Fire I love to off. Interject. Are you kidding me? My favorite shit. Okay, so yeah, let's start at the top. So the first scene in the movie is some dude, he gets a note, and he takes off. He's fucking running through yards, he breaks into a home, and then it's like a castle. It's like a very dramatic castle that he breaks into. And then he gets bitten by some sort of creature.
We don't see it. It's very shadowy.
His whole face turns all black and he's like foaming at the mouth and shit. and then gets pushed down the stairs by a mysterious man. It's all very mysterious.
Yeah, we're like, his body gets dumped in an alley.
Yeah, we're like, what the fuck just happened? And, okay, then flash forward, it's daytime, it's a funeral, probably for the dude we just saw die.
Mm-hmm.
There's some cryptic dialogue from some unknown characters. It's all very mysterious.
Yeah.
Which I have to say is, they did it very well. It's
good mood setter.
Yes, absolutely. I was intrigued. I was like, what the fuck's going on? The music is so goddamn dramatic that you're like, wow, I feel like I'm gonna die. I mean, like, I'm just easily made anxious, but still, it's very, very dramatic, very heavy. I loved it. I love the drama. I live for it. Yeah, literally the very first note I have about everything is just the drama and, like, just the fact that the set, it looks like a soap opera and the people are overacting and the lines are so, like, dramatic and poignant, and I loved it. I feel like it totally worked for me.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyways, moving right along with the plot. Or, do you have something?
No, this is just one of the many instances where they start playing rain sounds, despite there being no rain.
I mean, how do you know there's no rain?
You don't see it.
But we're hardly outside. There. Also, I feel like it's like lightning that we're hearing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on. The next thing we see is a giant bag.
It's true. Actually, literally, like, it's like the next shot is the giant bag, and we like zoom out from mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's an old-timey briefcase.
That's what it's my best guess. Suitcase-sized briefcase.
Oh, yeah, no.
Could be either one.
I think it's a suitcase, is what I meant to say. It looks like it should be a briefcase, but it's comically big. Like.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't get it.
Bags of the past.
Yeah, what do I know of the past? Am I right? Yeah, so it's this guy, the guy who we just saw die. It's his brother mm-hmm. who's talking to the coroner. And the coroner's like, yeah, man, his heart failed. Here's his stuff.
Yeah. And he gave it all to you.
Yeah.
But there's, like, nothing except this cottage.
Right. And he's like, okay, cool, we're going to move in. The guy's like, you want to live there? And he was like, I think. And he was like, okay, here's the keys. Sure. Yeah. So him and his newlywed wife
mm-hmm.
get all up in that cottage. They go for it.
Yeah, they get to the town.
Yes, they get to the town. They stop into a bar and ask for directions. This guy walks in and everyone takes a look at him and exits.
Not a word.
Not a word. Just literally there's probably 10 to 15 people in the bar and they just exit upon his arrival.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good touching feeling when you just move to a neighborhood. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes you feel at home.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the bartender also says the same thing to him, like, you're not going to live in that house, are you? And he's like, bro, what the fuck? Why does people keep saying that to me? So he doesn't say that at all. He's like, yeah, I'm going to live there.
The bartender's like, you know, no reason, but you just really shouldn't live
there. Yeah, pretty much. And he's like, I like the line where he's like, what? Like, why wouldn't I live there? My brother lived there. And he's like, well, your brother died there too. Okay, shit. You got right. Him. You fucking right. Good point.
Yeah, not subtle at all.
Yeah, not, definitely not subtle. But I feel like it's like still not revealing anything though. And that's what I like about it. The mystery is like so well kept for a long time.
It's true.
For a long time. You don't even know what people are actually, like, you're not given a name of what people are dying of until, like, 30 minutes into the movie. Which is a long time to keep that mystery going.
It's true.
But, like, I feel like they did it really well. So, anyways, that's getting ahead of myself, but.
Yeah, they're setting the tone, which is very dramatic, but very spooky.
Yeah. And
without.
Yeah.
Spoiling it.
Exactly.
Know?
Nothing spoiled for us yet. So anyways, they get the directions. They go to the house. The house is torn the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody came through there looking for something, doing something. So Mr. Big Dick decides he's going to go back to the bar with all the locals, no one that he knows. And he's just going to storm in and be like, who the fuck tore up my house? I know it was one of you guys. Who did it? And everybody's like, we didn't do it. And he's like, no, one of you did it. And, like, pisses off all the locals.
And they all leave again.
Again. But this time with good reason.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this asshole? You just moved here 10 minutes ago. We don't know you. Anyways, I like that. I feel like that's a great dramatic choice, too. It's just like, I'm going to go stir up some shit.
Yeah, I feel like they're trying to portray this main character guy as, like, you know, some kind of honorable, like, noble man who believes in justice or whatever, but he's just annoying.
Exactly. He's just annoying everybody. Yeah. He's, like, talks about, like, logic and all the time, and, like, yeah, he's just annoying and, like, a basic white dude.
Yeah. Always got his hair gelled back.
Yeah. I feel like every other character has, like, a cool, weird thing. Like, every other character has some, like, weird backstory you want to get into. Or, like, why do they act that way about certain things? Like, have these weird soap opera kind of characterizations. Except for the main guy and his wife. They're just so vanilla. They
have no past.
They have nothing. Yeah, they don't...
I can't tell you one thing about
literally,
them.
Literally, yeah. We don't even know where they came from or, like...
Where he got that big bag.
Where the fuck did he get that bag? Where can I get one?
Yeah, my first note here is just big bag boy.
Big bag boy. The three B's.
Oh, and when they get to the house, that's another part where the music plays, like, a key part. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Because they're, like, outside, and, like, I mean, if there was no music, it wouldn't look that great.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of a small, maybe cozy-looking house.
Yeah, but the music is so, like, light and beautiful and so calming. And then it's, like, the second they see it's destroyed.
It's literally, like, boom, boom.
Yeah, it, like, is just, it's so dramatic. It sounds like somebody died. It sounds like they just walked in on a dead body or something like that.
But it's just a messy house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Crazy. Anyways, so he goes and confronts all the dudes at the bar. And it's like, fuck you guys. And they're like, we didn't do it. And storm off. And so then he starts to talk to the bartender, who's like a cool dude.
He's like exceedingly patient with him, this bartender. Yeah, exactly. And like helpful for no reason.
Yeah.
Really.
That's true. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he like chills out with the bartender. Bartender gives him some advice, kind of. Just, like, establishes himself as, like, a cool guy.
Yeah.
Like, you can talk to me, buddy. I'm a cool guy.
I'm gonna be your sidekick in this movie.
Yeah, pretty much. So then it goes back to the wife, and she's home. She's getting some water. And then, creepy creepers.
Yeah, this old man sneaks up behind her. And then pretends like he didn't sneak up behind her.
Literally sneak. You can watch him, like, slowly taking steps, quietly trying to do it. And then he's like, oh, sorry, didn't mean to startle you. It's like, no, clearly you did. Anyways, so he's like, I'm looking for my daughter. She's like, I don't know what the fuck your daughter is. And he's like, cool, well, I'm just going to go in your house real quick, take a look-see. And he's like, please do not. But he does anyways.
And he just, like, throws out there. As white men do. He's like... Oh, my daughter, who is a great burden to me.
Yeah, I fucking hate her, but, you know, I guess I am responsible for her birth or whatever.
Whatever.
So, yeah, he says, she's like, he tells her that he's a doctor. And she's like, oh, were you, like, my husband's brother's doctor? And he's like, I don't know what the fuck, what are you talking about? And then, like, runs away. Yeah, so that was weird.
Alright, and then we go back to the husband. He has a name. I think it's Harry. It's Harry or it's Henry.
Spaldings is just what I've called them. Spalding. Mr. Spalding, Mrs. Spalding.
It bounced like Spalding. Yeah, anyway, he's coming back. He's walking back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody jumps out and attacks him.
Yeah.
And he, like, pins him down, and the guy who attacked him is like, why are you attacking me? And then he's a crazy guy. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, he very quickly establishes himself as a crazy guy and says something like, oh, you know, they killed your brother. Oh, by the way, my name's Peter. And, like, you know. He's honestly, this is my favorite character in the whole movie.
Yeah, favorite character, favorite actor.
Yeah, he's a great actor. I feel like it could have been too cheesy and, like, too annoying because his lines are completely insane. But the way that this guy chose to act the part, like, fully sold it.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's so good.
Outshine everybody. Scene Stealer. Mad Peter. Scene
Stealer. Yeah. So Mad Peter's like, yeah, I know all this stuff. I'm not crazy. Swear to God. Can I come get some coffee at your house? Perhaps some food? And the guy's like, yeah, I guess so. And so he comes and they eat food and Peter continues to be crazy.
It cuts to this scene of them at dinner, though. And it's like the same vibe as when, you know, you're a child and you get in trouble with your parents and they call you out to the table and they just, like, sit there until you say something.
It's true. I feel like almost every scene with the wife and husband feels like a police, like, investigation. They're trying to figure out the mystery, but I feel like you're right. Like, a parent interrogation is actually more accurate of a statement.
Yeah, they have, like, big cop energy.
True.
You know? True. They're very entitled. They're very pushy.
They're very white.
Mm-hmm. But there's also, like, a big emphasis on politeness in the movie that I want to get into that later.
That's actually a good, interesting, anyways, talking point. Okay. Hmm. So, motherfucking, Mad Peter comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And is, like, eating dinner and stuff, and then all of a sudden kind of stands up and is like, oh, fuck, I'm hearing the music. And you can, like, very lightly hear the sarong?
Sitar?
Sitar! What's sarong?
I don't know. I think that's a clothing item.
Maybe. Okay, anyways. Yeah, I think that's like a Speedo.
That's a thong, right?
No.
Okay.
Anyways, this is a moot point. Anyways, so Peter's like, oh, I can hear the music, and you can hear a sitar playing in the background, which you could kind of lightly hear it, I think, when he said, oh, they killed your brother, or something like that, and because he mentioned it in the scene before, like, mentioned something, like, oh, didn't you hear that too, or whatever?
Yeah.
To the guy. But anyways, this is another interesting sound thing that comes in. Because he says that, goes insane, and, like, runs out. And then it cuts to another scene of later that night, they're sleeping, and Mr. Spaulding hears the same music and turns on a light and is like, I hear something, and goes downstairs, and at the front door is Mad Peter with his face is all black, all foamed at the mouth, just like the first guy we saw die. So that's very interesting and another use of sound. I'm also going to say this because it's like way back that I forgot to mention, but another really good use of sound was in the credits. First of all, I love the font choice. I'm like such a sucker for a good font choice. I love fonts. But the credits are, like, use tons of lightning, too. And there's not even, like, flashes of lightning. It's just, like, the clapping of thunder, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, super interesting. But anyways, so they hear that sitar. He's dies. They bring him into the house and try and, like, fix him up. The only thing he gets to say is Dr. Franklin, which is the creepy doctor who was creeping on the wife, right?
Creepy creep.
And looking for his crazy daughter, I guess. So,
so Mr. Spaulding runs up to Dr. Franklin's house. He's like, there's a man dying in my house. And Dr. Franklin is pretty much like, so?
Sounds like that's a shitty place for him to die.
Sounds like your problem.
Sounds like you should throw him outside.
But, and then he's like, obviously, I'm a doctor of theology.
Yeah.
You know, just go around introducing yourself as a doctor when you just... Anyways, he comes anyway, and he sees dead, mad Peter. And he's like, oh, he had a stroke. He's a crazy man, obviously. He just had a stroke.
Yeah, no, he was like, he has epilepsy or some shit like that. I don't fucking know. And he's like, but his face is all black. What do you mean? And he's like, I don't know. I don't do medicine. Yeah. Get out of my head. And runs away. So, yeah, that was weird for them. And then, I'm not sure what happens right after that.
They put his body outside for the night. Because they're like, I don't want this in my kitchen.
Yeah, fair enough.
So they put it outside.
And then the next scene is when, I don't remember what the husband does the next scene. But isn't the next scene with the two ladies? With Anna and...
Oh, yeah. That's the next plot point.
Okay, cool. So then, oh, yeah. They go to that guy's... Oh, they go to Mad Peter's funeral. That's what happens next. I remember.
Yeah.
Here we go. So they go to Mad Peter's funeral the next day. And they're talking about... The wife's like, where is all of his friends? Like, why aren't there more people here? And the bartender's like, oh, he has tons of friends, but they don't want to come because of what he died of. And she's like, what the fuck do you mean? They don't know what he died of. And he's like, yeah, they don't know, but they call it the Black Death. So this is like 30 minutes into the fucking movie. And we just finally are putting on like a, oh, it's got some kind of name, some sort of nickname at
we
least.
Get one clue. We get
nugget of an information. Oh, I love it. I love that. I love to not know. Anyways,
lead me on.
Yes,
please.
Yes, bitch. So, yeah. So they're like, here's this nugget. It's the Black Death. We don't know what the fuck that means. And so then the husband's like, I'm going to have some whiskey and talk to you about that whole Black Death business. And the wife's like, cool, I'm going to walk home by myself. And so the wife walks home, mm-hmm. and she gets home, and there's some young girl there, like, putting all these flowers together. She's like, hey, who the fuck are you? She's like, oh, you left your door unlocked. I'm Dr. Franklin's degenerate daughter who he hates. And she's like, oh, cool, what's up? And so they like have a very weird cryptic conversation where she's like, you know, your dad's fucking scary, you know that, right? She's like, no, he's so nice, I don't know what you mean. You guys should come over for dinner. And she's like, okay, we'll do that. So,
Dr. Franklin shows up.
Well, no. Well, yeah, she like goes outside and there's some weird butler.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't know he's Dr. Franklin's butler yet. But he's just some like weird dude in the woods and he's like staring at her.
She's creeping on
everybody. Yeah, he's always in the woods. He like lives most of his time in the woods, I guess. Anyways, she like runs inside and she's like, oh shit, I gotta go home, my dad's freaking out. And so her dad comes in and it's like, yeah, I didn't give this bitch permission to be here, but you guys can come over for dinner or whatever, so see you later.
And the wife is like, oh, you're being like weird and harsh. And he's like, don't tell me how to parent. And
yeah,
she's like, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But basically the women in this movie aren't given a lot of characterization. Like, Anna's just like basically a victim of her circumstances.
Yeah.
And the wife is just fucking boring. Like, there's nothing really going for her. But the only nugget of goodness in this movie was that she stood up for her that one time.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's good. At least women standing up for women, that's a good thing. Yeah. And she said one thing and then immediately was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You're right. Fuck her. Like, so I guess it didn't really, really count, but she
tried. Then she's like, oh, you're having us over for dinner later. And the doctor's like, sure, I guess. Which is another part of like politeness being the main factor in this movie. It's that people just do things because it's the polite thing to do. They don't question things because it's the polite thing to do, and they put themselves in danger because of it.
Honestly, that's some small town shit right there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Minding your own business is, like, deadly.
For sure. That's actually true. And I feel like that, not to be too far of a stretch, but it kind of reminds me of, like, Big Little Lies in that way. Just that, like...
Oh, yeah.
Politeness almost like gets them into some shit, and just the fact that like
social etiquette
and like that kind of social etiquette makes you like tend to lie about, like, your life and, like, where you are because of what's socially acceptable and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know? Follow these rules, like, even when it's bad for us.
Yeah. Interesting.
Which I think is, like, about as deep as they get in this movie.
Yeah. we also might just be reading too much into it because we tend to do that, but...
You know, you're welcome.
Whatever. Okay, anyways. So, then, they all go and have dinner at Dr.
Franklin.
Frankenfurter's house. And, so, basically, it's really weird and awkward, obviously. And, Anna is, like, banished upstairs.
Yeah.
And then, eventually, he lets her come down and, like, the... Mrs. Spaulding and Anna go and visit her pets.
Anna.
Which is a room filled floor to ceiling with fucking birds and, like...
Yeah, just cages of animals.
Yeah.
Rabbits and cats and birds. And...
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
So...
And in there, she tells the wife... She's like, my dad's going to try to convince you to move. Don't do it.
And then cut to him trying to convince him to move. And Mr. Spaulding's like, no, I'm good. Just got here. So I think I'm going to chill. And so then they like come back together after that. And he's like, Anna, why don't you play us some sweet music on the sitar? And she's like, okay, and starts to play. And then here's where shit gets weird, because there's, like, a scene of just Dr. Franklin and Anna, and they just stare at each other, and it gets, like, more intense, and the music builds as it so dramatically has, and...
Yeah, and the eye contact just gets more and more intense until, I guess... Dr. Franklin just can't stand it, and he snags the guitar and smashes it, the sitar, you know, and smashes it like fucking Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And pretty much tells everybody to get out. And of course the Spauldings are, again, too polite to ask anything. They're like, oh wow, that was fucking weird, but it's none of my business. Good night.
Yeah. So they leave. And then they go back home and they're like, hey, where the fuck's our cat? Cut to Dr. Franklin's house and weird, creepy man, Mr. Burns looking guy who's like from the woods. Or
Mr. Burns looking guy. He does.
He does look like Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
But who's like lives in the woods of Dr. Franklin's house, who hasn't said any words up to those. Who hasn't said any words yet. Still doesn't say any words. Gives this cat to Anna, and she's like, hell yeah, a baby cat, which is definitely the, what's their faces cat.
Yeah, the Spaulding's cat.
Spaulding's, it's the Spaulding's cat.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, the Spauldings are like, hey man, this is a weird fucking place, am I right? What's up with that? What's going on? Very mysterious.
So somewhere in the course of things... Mr. Spaulding ends up at the bartender's house, bar, whatever it is.
I think it's both.
Yeah, I think he lives there. And the bartender's like, check it out. I dug up Mad Peter's body. Look at his neck and his bites. And he's like, does this remind you of anything? He's like, maybe a king cobra? That's how it goes, right?
No. All right. Well, so they go...
From the top.
They go from Mad Peter, and then he's like, we gotta see if this is... These bites are on somebody else's body, too, so we have to dig up your brother.
Yeah.
And then they go and dig up his brother, which is not true. Like, so many other people have died. Like, we could dig up anybody. We don't have to dig up your fucking brother, so you have to look at your dead brother's dead face. Like...
Yeah,
it's fucked up, bartender.
I guess he'd be, like, the freshest.
Whatever. Anyways, so they dig up his brother. It's very traumatic, I can imagine. And he does have the two bites. And then they're like, oh, this kind of reminds me of King Cobra. This is the only thing that looks similar to this. Which I think is funny, they wait this long to, like, make that connection. If yeah. they've seen that, like, wouldn't they be like, maybe there's just a King Cobra on the loose?
There's really no, like, snake symbolism or, like, you know, if this movie came out today, it would be like, all the trailers would just have, like, shots of snakes doing stuff, and there would just be a lot more.
Do you think if it was, like, remade today, people would put more snake imagery in it?
Yeah. Because, like...
I mean, I kind
there
of...
There isn't any.
Yeah. It's... Yeah, I think it's just trying to be mysterious, but also just fully playing into, you know, what people were buying at this time. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't want to be anything... It wasn't trying to be, like, an art house film or, like, you know, a cool indie film. It was just, like, this is going to make us money. Here's just a basic fucking storyline. Some weird characters. That's it.
That's it.
But I kind of like that because it's so, like, you literally don't know. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Up until the only thing that gives it away is the fact it's named The Reptile.
Yeah. And the cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Completely spoils.
It's true. That's really true. Like
the whole movie.
Yeah. They could have made this look like it was going to be something totally different. If it was just marketed differently and had a different name, you could keep that mystery for so long.
So long.
But then also, we probably would have never bought the VHS tape if it didn't have the...
The face.
The face. Yeah. Anyways. Hmm. Anyways. We digress. But, okay, yeah, so they dig up the brother's body. They're like, King Cobra. Interesting. I believe the next thing that happens is, like, he goes home, and then they find the note, right?
Yeah, they find the note. I'm not sure if it's a new note or if it's the note that Anna left Spalding's brother.
I think it was the note she left his brother.
The OG note.
Yeah, but I don't know.
And anyway, they read it, and it says, like, oh, God, please help me, or something really dramatic.
Yeah, I love how it gets the time for, like, the exclamation in front of it, you know? Yeah. Not just, like, help me, but, like, oh, God, please help me. I love it. That's how you should write a note.
Yeah.
Who wrote the note?
Who wrote the note?
Okay, anyways.
So, yeah, Ms.
So Spalding. The note said, Dear Ron. okay. Enough Jersey Shore jokes. 3 is good.
Yeah, 3 is great. So Mr. Spalding goes running over to Dr. Franklin's house. And it's, like, fairly deserted. And, like, dark and quiet. And he's creeping around. He's like, Anna! And stuff. And then he finds her, and ba-bam, we get the reveal of the reptile face.
Do we? Is that it?
That's it. Like, that's where she steps out of the shadows the first time as a reptile.
Okay.
Right. And it's actually, like, pretty shocking and pretty spooky, especially the first time we saw it.
It's a good jump scare.
Yeah, it's a good jump scare, and, like, it's not any kind of thing you would expect to see, you know? Like when you see the creepy guy in The Goonies or something, it's not, like, an inherently scary image, but just, like, it's very surprising.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's shocking.
I bet.
Just the point.
In this time, too. I don't know. It's weird. I like it.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
And I do want to say, really quickly, though, I really like Dr. Franklin's house. It's, like, very spooky, but, like, not, like, overly spooky. It's just, like, got portraits of people everywhere, and, like, it's a very castle-like, and the front lawn's always dark. Yeah, exactly. The front lawn is always, like, pitch black every time we see it, and there's, like, lights on inside. It makes it look very spooky, and... eerie, and
it's very gothic, and it's got, like, all this stuff from his travels spread around, and
I feel like he has, like, one room that's kind of like his study that has, like, that kind of shit.
It's definitely, like, that touch of exotic fetishism.
Absolutely. That
old rich people tend to have.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like, oh, look at all the places I've been. And
what is, isn't it, it's in Atlanta.
What's where, in Atlanta?
The show, TV show Atlanta.
Oh.
Where, great, you know, show. That scene where, I can't even remember what the episode is. They're at like a house party with like, thrown by some like rich white guy. And they go into like his study, and it's got the scene with the Awaken My Love cover in the background of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh.
But, okay. Anyways.
Mm. Anyways. She bites him. Surprise. And for some reason, he doesn't die instantly like everyone else has. He's got time to run home and tell his wife to get a knife and slice it open. And, oh, here's another fun fact. They had to delete this scene from the movie to get it, like, approved to show in theaters.
Oh, really?
But there's a scene that there's, like, a close-up of her cutting the snake bite on his neck open to, like, let the poison out.
Oh, right.
So, like, there's, like, a solid neck slit that we will never see.
Oh, so sad. Love a good neck slit.
You hate neck slits.
I know, but like a side neck slit seems fine. I just can't think about the like big veins, you know? Can't do it. Okay. So yeah, she bites that bitch. Mrs. Spaulding comes into the rescue, lets that bite ventilate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she goes over to the house.
Yeah.
Well, they put him to bed.
Oh, right. Yeah, bartender comes over to help.
Mm-hmm. And, meanwhile, back at the creepy castle, the guy who has not said anything, the Mr. Burns-looking guy, is talking to Dr. Franklin, and pretty much we realize that this guy's in charge. And he's pulling all the strings, and he's like, you go over there, and you make sure he died. And Dr. Franklin's like, what if he's not dead? And then they both just, like, look at this snake that they have on the table. Like a, what is it, like a mummified snake?
Yeah, it stuffed. Just looks like a statue.
Yeah.
But it might be a mummified snake. I didn't even make that.
Anyway, yeah, Dr. Franklin goes to the Spaulding's house, and he's like, oh, just checking in to see on Mr. Spaulding. And the bartender answers the door, and he's like, oh, yeah, he died an hour ago, because the bartender's smart.
Yeah, he's tricking him.
Yeah, spoiler, he did not die.
Yeah.
And gets Dr. Franklin to go away, and then the bartender makes, like, some special hot chocolate. He's like, drink that, and it'll put you to sleep, and you'll feel better in the morning.
Yeah, like, what?
That's a weird...
What was that?
Yeah.
And I feel like she doesn't drink it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then goes... But still, like, what the fuck was he trying to do?
Yeah. I don't know. He's just trying to...
Sketchy.
He thinks everybody likes alcohol as much as he does.
But no, he like, put a pill in there. Yeah. Was that an alcohol pill?
An alcoholic pill.
I'm pretty sure he put a pill in there.
I don't think they had pills at that time.
What? It's in the 1960s?
It was not the 60s, I don't think.
Okay, well, there's still like
cars and stuff.
I know, but still in the when they shot it, it was the 60s. So maybe they just forgot that they didn't have pills. That's the thing that happens.
Maybe it was a pill.
I don't remember.
It's not
I feel
fucking
like
important.
It's not, but it's important to me.
All right, let's keep talking about it then.
Just kidding.
It's going to be a two-parter.
Okay. All right. So Mrs. Spaulding goes over to the house.
Creepy castle.
Go to the creepy castle. She's like, what's up, bitches?
Again, it's dark and spooky. But yes. The one difference is that when she goes through Anna's pet's room, all the pets are gone. When Mr. Spaulding was there, there were still some pets.
What?
So that's weird.
Yeah. And then, I'm trying to think of what things is going on.
Start to get crazy, like,
Franklin. Mr. Franklin, yeah.
Dr. Franklin. Apologies.
Apologies. So, Dr. Franklin, also goes up to Anna's bedroom once he gets back home and tries to stab her and then realizes she's not in her bed. And then goes downstairs to some, like, creepy-ass fucking stone cave-looking basement situation.
Yeah.
And she's, like, asleep on, like, an altar. And then, like, he goes to try and stab her. It's like a bubbling
pit of some liquid behind
her. Of, like, lava, kind of? I don't know. Yeah. It's very, yeah.
She's, like, under a blanket over there.
It's not very telling. One thing with this movie is there's a lot of things they put out there and don't really explain.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
Yeah, it's very moody.
Mysterious, yeah. Very mysterious. But, okay, so...
He's gonna stab her with the sword, and then
Mr. Burns tackles him.
Mr. Burns has a lantern, which falls on the ground, which of course is covered in hay or something.
Oh, okay, wait, so there wasn't lava, it just turns into fire. Sorry, I'm extremely dumb.
Yeah, no, the pit stays there and they wrestle, and Dr. Franklin throws Mr. Burns into the bubbling pit.
Yeah.
And that's when the wife comes in and screams.
As
you do.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Franklin chases her upstairs. And Anna bites Dr. Franklin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does that. And then she's... Anna starts to go for Mrs. Spaulding, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then somebody, like, breaks through the window.
Oh, wait, no, we missed the scene where Dr. Franklin...
Is there a fight? Nah, just people, normal screaming. Lame. Okay.
Yeah, so when Dr. Franklin traps Mrs. Spaulding in that room, and then he gives his, like, villain monologue where everything is explained, and he's like,
I
went and, like, explored this snake cult in Malaysia. And also while I was in Malaysia, my daughter was kidnapped, and I was like, oh, no big deal, happens all the time, I'm gonna wait for the ransom note. But then she just shows back up one day, totally fine.
Cool.
And they go home, and then he figures out that she's been cursed to be a snake.
Snake lady.
Snake lady as punishment.
Damn.
And so he's, yeah. That's that deal.
So, yeah, he explains pretty much what's going on. And so she's like, oh shit. And then he dies.
Yeah, pretty soon.
And then... Snake Lady starts to go after Mrs. Spaulding.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone breaks, is it her husband?
Yeah, she's got, like, her hands on Mrs. Spaulding's neck, and she's, like, going for the bite. But then, yeah, no, the bartender comes and, like, smashes the window. And, like, Anna gets cold. And dies.
Because cold-blooded baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, she dies, and then Mrs. Spaulding runs out, escapes.
Yeah, Mrs. Spaulding comes in and grabs her.
Yeah, okay.
And then they're leaving, and she's like, oh, wait, the cat. She grabs the cat.
Nice. Cat lives, baby.
Yeah, and well, they all get out of the house, and it's burning, and they look at it. And they turn around and walk into the woods.
And credits roll.
Credits.
That's the end. It just so abruptly ends. Yeah. It's a good choice.
The climax, and then it's over.
It's over. That's how I wish every movie was. Absolutely.
No, I need the unwinding period. I need, like...
See, I will say one thing about being a millennial is that I truly have no attention span anymore. Like, my attention span when I was 10 years old was worlds better than it is right now.
Yeah.
Like, I am so fucking easily distracted. It's insane. So, yeah, I love that. give me the top of the action, then cut the story right off. The
highlight reel, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I need. Yeah, that was the fucking movie. And it was a whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. So I guess we should just review that shit. Give it a some sort of stars out of stars, right? All right, Brennan. Give me that review.
All right, I'm going to give this movie a 7 out of a possible 10 mouth foams. Because, all right, let's break it down. The three things I'm really looking for here, contestants, is 1, plot, 2, character, and 3, just, like, mood. Which includes, like, you know, the score and the shots and the sets and shit like that. But anyway, like, I thought the characters were great, except for the main characters. Like, everybody, like, even the guy in the bar who had, like, one line had more of a character than fucking Mr. and Mrs. Spalding. So that was, like, good, but not all the way good. And then the plot was great because it was very simple. But, like, you don't learn. Like, the information, like, it's withheld really nicely, but it's dumped on you at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, is pretty common with horror movies especially. But, you know, I like it when they work into the B plot, and then, like, on the second time you watch it, you're like, oh. Which there was a kind of a little bit with this movie, but that was more because it was confusing than well constructed. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great review.
But the mood is fucking 10 out of 10. Very dramatic music, very dramatic acting. Yeah, I liked the setting, like this small town. We really only see like two or three locations in the whole movie.
Small emphasis small town. On small.
And then like there's lots of woods in between everything, apparently. Yes. Whenever anyone's walking anywhere.
It's through woods.
It's through a or lot like, of woods. Or,
there's one time when journey. Where Mrs. Spalding is literally walking through, like, a fully empty field. Like, almost looks like a desert. Like, what the fuck? What is this place?
But, yeah, no, I would be creeped out. Just by the place. So, yeah. That's my review. What's your review?
My review is, I think I'm gonna go with, an 8 awkward eye contacts with your dad out of a possible 10 awkward eye contacts with your dad. And I say this just because the reason why I was thinking 7 as well.
Yeah.
The reason why I gave it an 8 is just because it was so much fun. Just a fun fucking movie. Yeah. So, I really liked the music and the, like, element that added through the whole thing. And also, I just loved it so much because it was extremely campy and dramatic, and it really reminded me of a soap opera. It was like the sets looked like, you know, no, they're not fights. It's just fucking kids.
Yeah.
It's dumb. I only want to be interrupted by a fight. Anyways, the sets were just so dramatic just by themselves. Like, and the way everybody was dressed was dramatic. It was just all just to the top. And I loved that. But like you said, it was extremely confusing, and it wasn't necessarily a well-constructed story. It was just like a really basic story. And then, yeah, the information dump at the end. Like, I think they did a really good job interlacing the mystery and giving you clues as to, like, what's going on. But then they forgot to do that at the end with, like, figuring out what's going on. They were just, like, spent so much time, you know, crafting the mysteriousness of it, which I loved. But then the end super falls flat. So, that's disappointing. But I feel like, honestly, from old movies, when I watch this shit, I'm just really looking for a romp, you know? I'm not looking for anything technical and, like, perfect. I'm just looking for a good time. It was a good time. So, 8 out of 10.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I forgot to say, like, I really did just really like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
It's too long and confusing, but I didn't care. It was fun to look at and fun to laugh at. And, I mean, we watched it 3 times, and I wasn't bored any of those times.
Exactly. So, exactly. What more could you ask for?
Yeah. If you see it out there, pick it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the worth the... What was it? I can see the price tag on it.
It's like...
Oh, this one was $8.
$8.
Jesus Christ. I don't know if it was worth $8. Oh. $1 a star? No, I'm just kidding. It was great. It's great. Under $10. So, and we'll have it forever. But, yeah, that was our podcast, baby. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Watch your neck.
Protect your neck. Yeah, thanks for listening. And don't forget to be kind.
And rewind before returning.
Yeah, baby. Woo-wee!